Vimes squinted at the card as the women crunched off down the drive carrying nets and ropes. It said, Brenda, Lady Rodley, the Dower House, Quirm Castle, Quirm. What it meant, he realised, was that striding away down the path like an animated rummage stall was the Dowager Duchess of Quirm, who owned more country than you could see from a very high mountain on a very clear day. Nobby would not have approved. There seemed to be a special kind of poverty that only the very, very rich could possibly afford. That was how you got to be a power in the land, he thought. You never cared a toss about whatever anyone else thought, and you were never, ever uncertain about anything. He padded back to the house. A door was open. It led to a large but dark and musty hall. Up in the gloom, the heads of dead animals haunted the walls. The ramkins seemed to have endangered more species than an ice age. Vimes wandered aimlessly through another mahogany archway. It was a dining room, containing the kind of table where the people at the other end are in a different time zone. One end had been colonised by silver candlesticks. It was laid for two. A battery of cutlery flanked each plate. Antique wine glasses sparkled in the candlelight. A terrible premonition took hold of Vimes at the same moment as a gust of captivation, the most expensive perfume available anywhere in Ankh-Morpork, blew past him. "Ah, Captain, so nice of you to come!" Vimes turned round slowly, without his feet appearing to move. Lady Ramkin stood there magnificently. Vimes was vaguely aware of a brilliant blue dress that sparkled in the candlelight, a mass of hair the colour of chestnuts, a slightly anxious face that suggested that a whole battalion of skilled painters and decorators had only just dismantled their scaffolding and gone home, and a faint creaking that said underneath it all mere corsetry was being subjected to the kind of tensions more usually found in the heart of large stars. "I," he said, if you'd said I'd dress more suitable, extremely, very, She bore down upon him like a glittering siege engine. In a sort of dream, he allowed himself to be ushered to a seat. He must have eaten, because servants appeared out of nowhere with things stuffed with other things, and came back later and took the plates away. The butler reanimated occasionally to fill glass after glass with strange wines. The heat from the candles was enough to cook by. And all the time Lady Ramkin talked in a bright and brittle way about the size of the house, the responsibilities of a huge estate, the feeling that it was time to take one's position in society more seriously, while the setting sun filled the room with red and Vimes' head began to spin. Society, he managed to think, didn't know what was going to hit it. Dragons weren't mentioned once, although after a while something under the table put its head on Vimes' knee and dribbled. Vimes found it impossible to contribute to the conversation. He felt outflanked, beleaguered. He made one sally, hoping maybe to reach high ground from which to flee into exile. "Where do you think they've gone?" he said. "Where what?" said Lady Ramkin, temporarily halted. "The dragons, you know. Errol and his, female." "Oh, somewhere isolated and rocky, I should imagine," said Lady Ramkin. "Favourite country for dragons." "But she's... a magical animal," said Vimes. "What'll happen when the magic goes away?" Lady Ramkin gave him a shy smile. "Most people seem to manage," she said. She reached across the table and touched his hand. "Your men think you need looking after," she said meekly. "Oh, do they?" said Vimes. "Sergeant Colon said he thought we'd get along like a maison en flambé." "Oh, did he? And he said something else," she said. "What was it now? Oh, yes. It's a million-to-one chance," said Lady Ramkin. "I think he said. But it might just work." She smiled at him. And then it arose and struck Vimes that in her own special category she was quite beautiful. This was the category of all the women in his entire life who had ever thought he was worth smiling at. She couldn't do worse, but then he couldn't do better. So maybe it balanced out. She wasn't getting any younger, but then who was? And she had style and money and common sense and self-assurance and all the things that he didn't. And she had opened her heart. And if you let her, she could engulf you. The woman was a city. And eventually, under siege, you did what Ankh-Morpork had always done. Unbar the gates, let the conquerors in, and make them your own. How did you start? She seemed to be expecting something. He shrugged and picked up his wine glass and sought for a phrase. One crept into his wildly resonating mind. "Here's looking at you, kid," he said.